Hello, folks. Welcome to the Jock and Journo show once again, all after Paddy Cripps last week. We have another special guest. This is a man who's kicked a lot of goals, astute businessman, and now in charge of the direction of the game. We can't wait to have a chat to him. I'm Jay Clark. I'll introduce him in a second. Hello to you, five-time All-Australian, five-time Best and Fairest winner, three-time Anzac Day medalist, Scotty Penderbury. How you going, mate?
Good. How are you?
How was your battle with Cripple last week?
It went well. He got the 10 coaches' votes. Probably best on ground and sort of just battled away like the Tigers do, mate.
Yep. Bit sore. Did he land on you at any point, like you said?
No, he didn't crush me this time. Right. He crushed me a few times last time. Jeez, he's a big boy. I said it last week, but he's massive.
It was a great game, and he spoke well. But our attention turns to this man. He was voted by Matthew Lord as the game's best mature age pickup. As I say, hello to you, James Podziadley.
Thanks, Jay. It's good to be here with a future Hall of Famer in Pendles.
Absolutely.
Hey, speaking of future Hall of Famers, mate, 104 AFL games at the Cats and the Crows, 195 goals at the two clubs, Liston medal winner, Frosty medal winner, I think four-time VFL Team of the Year player. Just kicked an absolute mountain of goals and then won a flag with the Cats, of course, in 2011 and doing some exciting things now. Am I right that you are running starting up a play centre for kids? Is it AFL Max? Tell us about that.
Yeah, it is. It's AFL Max. It's a light bulb that I had probably about 3 years ago that, I think AFL is the greatest sport in the world. And, one of my passions is getting kids active. So I sort of wanted to create a venue where, kids can come in and basically explore and sort of be themselves in a safe environment. We grew up as kids kicking the ball on the street, kicking the ball through trees, jumping fences, climbing trees. But you don't see kids doing that as much these days. So the idea was, let's create a venue that that kids can do that.
Well, play centres are nuts at the best of times, let's be honest. Scotty, what's it going to be like when you throw a footy in there as well with a bunch of three-year-olds? Podsy, it's going to be pretty hectic.
The idea is it's supposed to be hectic, supposed to be crazy, but it's going to be safe. So, we want our parents to come in the venue with their kids. There's a cafe in there for them to stay and watch, and we're going to have a whole heap of different programs as well, so kids can develop, not only just play and have fun, but it's about a development angle as well, which is exciting for us and the AFL in particular. I think we've got some cool tech in there. We've got virtual reality with some interactive screens. Kids can actually hit targets and play games virtually too, so it's going to be a different offering.
Cool. I know my two-year-old, Jax is actually two tomorrow, my young fella, but He'll definitely visit AFL Max. Now, another interest, Pods, just quickly. Yep. I spoke to your wife last week. Can you tell us a little bit about, is it Mount Mary Wines?
Yep.
I've been looking to try and buy some. Very hard to secure.
Elite.
On the phone last week and talking, and all of a sudden it's like, I think I actually know who you are. My husband used to play for Geelong in 2011.
Yep.
James Podziadley. And I said, I know Pods.
Yep.
I know Pods. So can you talk to us a little bit about that?
Yeah. I've got a feeling that the invite on the podcast today is because you want to sort of get on that list, maybe, Pendles. But
I am waiting to get on the members table.
Beautiful wines if you haven't tried them.
Yeah. Claire manages the business. It's her family's winery. So it's been around since about 1972. Her grandfather started it, and they make a pretty good drop there. So for our family, it's pretty good at Christmas time and most birthdays that we get served the best wine in Australia.
What is your favourite, Podsy? I mean, this Scotty here, it's his one indulgence. Like, he lives 99% extremely dedicated, disciplined lifestyle. Won't eat a lolly or anything like that. But so occasionally has the red wine, Scotty.
That's occasionally do, yeah.
After a match.
Yeah, occasionally do.
Now, what's your favourite?
The Mount Mary Quintet for me is probably my favourite. But from a grape perspective, I'm a Pinot fan, so that lighter style wine is probably where I sit. But
I'm trying to get my hands on, the Quintet.
Is that right?
So, I've been trying to look for it. Yep. Found it in Prince Wine Store in South Melbourne.
Right.
There. Went to buy it, and the owner said it's the last one and it's his, so he just leaves it there on display. So that's what forced me to search. So I'm waiting to get in on the members table, and hopefully Pods can sneak me to the front of the line.
Pods, if he can do something about that, mate, for the Jocking Journal.
I definitely can, Pendles. We'll speak after this.
Well, hey, we are at the George, of course, and what a magnificent place it is. Magnificent Vietnamese menu, Podsy. If you haven't had some of the prawns, sticky pork, Pendles, what's your favourite? You like the beef? Oh, you just smash everything. The calamari.
The salad is really good. The chicken salad, that's unbelievable.
It's 162 Collins Street, Podsy. You can come here if you're after AFL work drinks, mate, or before a game. You just pop in here. Greggy and Maud will be able to look after you. 162 Collins Street. Make sure you get here to George. We'll always look after you. But Podsy, let's get to your magnificent football career, mate, because you had a chance at the Bombers. You trained at you're kicking snag after snag in the VFL. You had a chance at the Bombers and a chance at the Pies. Why did you think that it didn't quite work out for you in those earlier days?
Yeah, it's a good question. And on reflection, it was just maturity, really. It was both physical maturity and mental too. Like my first 3 years, I spent 2 years at Essendon, as you said, and a year at Collingwood on rookie lists. And back then, I think I probably just wasn't my application wasn't there as a young player. I thought it was at the level, and every young player comes through and they think they're pushing themselves to some sort of level. But on reflection, I probably wasn't there. Physically, I just didn't have that. You know, as a key position player, you need strength, power, speed, and endurance. And it just took me a lot of time to actually develop those tools, basically. So yeah, it's probably a maturity thing.
What kept you going, I suppose? How many years did you get knocked back? Was it seven, six?
Yeah, it was about, I think I'm potentially about seven different pre-seasons at different clubs, Pendles. What kept me going? I think just wanting to be the best I could be. There was opportunities back when I was playing VFL to play local footy or country footy, and the money was probably a little bit better than what I was getting paid in the VFL. But I think VFL, the attraction there, and it still is now, I'm sure, for some players, is that you're competing against players on AFL lists. And that probably motivated me to train harder and do the extra weight sessions, because, you know, there was times when a player would get dropped and I'd have to play on them. So you just prepare really well. So it was probably the motivation to be as best I could.
Yeah.
And clearly you thought you were better than some of your opponents when you kept kicking
the AFL guys.
Exactly. And that must have given you some sort of confidence.
Yeah, there's a handful of occasions where that happened. But you probably, once I got to about 22, I sort of thought that I could feel I could dominate at a VFL game.
Yeah.
And that gave me confidence to go. And then I did a couple of pre-seasons. And then once I got to about 24, 25, I just thought, well, my time's done. Like, no one actually gets recruited at that age back then. So you just basically go on and try and forge a career in something else and keep being the best VFL player you can. And as you know, things sort of change pretty quickly.
What was the most snags you kicked in a game, VFL, and in a season?
10.
In a game?
That's what I sort of talked about. When I got to about 22, 23, I'd played down back for a couple of years, and then the coach sort of swung me forward a couple of games, and I just got my confidence after a bag of 10 and thought, I could probably play at the level. Yeah. So.
Most in a season?
I couldn't tell you, Pendles. Maybe around 70 or 80.
You kicked 68, I think it was, at Geelong in their VFL team, 2009. You won the best and fairest. I'm not sure if you were captain at the time.
Yeah.
And then you got picked up, I think it was pick 50 in that year's rookie draft. Age, what were you, 26 or 27?
28.
28?
Yeah.
Unbelievable. 28. So can you tell us, when was the – you thought at that point your AFL days were – no chance.
Yeah.
But can you tell us about the first conversation, or when did the spark ignite that, hang on, the Cats could be interested, or this could happen, age 28?
Yeah, really late, actually, and I still remember it pretty vividly. I was working as a high-performance manager or an assistant, running the weight sessions and things like that at a club.
So you were the fitness lackey.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, basically
not just, for the AFL, though.
Yeah, for the AFL, and the VFL captain. And the VFL best and fairest had gone past the boys. 2009 won the grand final. So I was basically in the office writing the programs, the off-season programs for all the players, as you know, Pendles.
Yeah.
You probably hate getting them.
We follow those closely.
Yeah, that's your secret. Neil Baum and Steve Hocking and Stephen Wells pulled me into their office and said, just want to have a chat to you. And I was like, the next week, I was actually going to London to spend a week with the English rugby team, with their high performance guys, with Brenton Sanderson. So one of your coaches now, Pendles, he was going to spend a week with the coaches. I was going to do the fitness stuff. And they pulled me aside and said, mate, before you go, just want to ask you, what are your thoughts on, you know, becoming a mature age rookie? Because the rules have changed and we've got, you know, Tommy Hawkins and Cam Mooney, and at the moment there's no sort of, you know, backup if one of those guys goes down. And they said, go away to London and just work out whether you want to be a part of that in the future. You know, we'd still commit to helping you out with your exercise science sort of journey, and you can still be involved in that department going forward. But we'd like to put you on a rookie list. And I sort of went back to my desk in my office and thought, I don't need to go back to London, out to London to have to decide this. I want to do it now. Like, so basically they just asked me to put the application in and keep it quiet. So I put the draft application in and kept it quiet till December.
Do you mind me asking what your rookie wage was?
Yeah.
Like, was it absolute minimum or?
Yeah, I had to take a pay cut. I was running a business back then. I was, you know, playing VFL and getting paid at Geelong. So I did have to take a pay cut.
Yeah.
I can't even tell you, like, what I think it might have gone from. It might have been like we worked out a deal of like $100,000. I think, yeah. It might have been like,
yeah,
50 as a rookie, and then I still did some work in the fitness department and got another 40 or 50.
Amazing.
Yeah. So I remember thinking, you know, one step or two steps back to take three steps forward potentially.
I was at the Geelong Advertiser at the time, and I think I watched you play a practice match in about February, and I spoke to Cameron Mooney after the game, and you did well in the practice match, and we asked Moons at the time. I said, What about this bloke, Podsy Adley? Like, he's come from nowhere. He's 28 years old. Like, do you think he could play? It looks like he could play senior footy. Do you think he could play? And Moon said, he's definitely in the team. I'm telling Bomber right now, he's going to play in the round one team. And yeah, I think he played round three against Fremantle.
Yep.
And then basically was in the team ever since.
Yeah.
Did it click automatically that you were good enough to not only be on an AFL list, but to play well in an AFL team?
Now, you still doubt yourself, I think, coming in thinking, I've played VFL for 10 years, how am I good enough? But one thing, Cam Mooney, you know, going into that club was one of the clubs that the culture that existed about the senior players, and Moons for me was the guy, was that the knowledge transference and being able to actually help the younger players, and I wasn't a younger player, the newer players coming through.
Yeah.
Moons taught me everything there was to know about being a key forward, what opposition players were trying to do to you. He gave me some tools. I'm thinking, I'm here competing for a spot with you, but you're handing me over all this knowledge. And I just thought from then, I've kept that from all the clubs I've been to since. I thought that was really powerful. And Geelong had that culture. Like, I remember Lingy, you know, communicating and coaching some of the younger midfielders coming through. And I was like, that's amazing when, you know, you've got a spot in the team and these guys can come and actually take your spot. So Moons for me was that person, and that team first approach, which, you know, all clubs have now, was there from the foundation.
How was your first AFL experience, like night before, game day, running out there, nerves, excitement, all of it?
I was just probably excited. I get nervous before games. I did get nervous before games. That game for me was just pure excitement, and Lingy was the captain at the time, presenting me with the jumper, and the words he said around, you know, deserving my opportunity, just basically gave me the confidence that I sort of needed at that point. And then it was just use my tools that I'd basically developed over 10 years, some of the stuff, the feedback I got from coaches, you know, I wasn't quick enough, I wasn't fit enough, I wasn't strong enough, all those sort of things I'd developed in 10 years, and now I was quick and strong and fit. So I put them to work.
How'd you go in your first game? Who'd you play?
Freo. Yep. I think I went okay, Pendles.
What'd you do?
Don't pretend like you don't know. No.
There was a smile. No. There's definitely a few stats.
No, we lost the game by a goal, I think, in the end. But I think I took a few contested marks, and that was always something that I love working on. So that was pretty handy.
Two goals, 17 disposals, 11 marks, Podsy, in your AFL debut. That is outstanding.
Won the goalkeeping 2011 at Geelong. Is that right as well?
Yep.
It's not bad. Is that your first season?
That was my second year. Yeah, so.
Premiership year.
Yep.
Did you use the motivation, like all the knockbacks, all the people who told you you weren't good enough, probably, in a polite kind of a way? Did that motivate you? Did that fuel you? Had to, surely.
Yeah, I think at the time it may have, but I said the Pendles before, like, I wanted to become the best player I could. And I actually, some of the people that gave me that feedback, I actually respected. So, you know, Pendles' old mentor, Mick Moldau, sat me down when he delisted me and told me a couple of things. It was like, rightio, well, this guy's pretty knowledgeable. Let's not disrespect it as much as it's frustrating and annoying that I'm not going to be here. But you got to take it in and go, if he wants me to work on my endurance, well, go away and work on your endurance. Mm. It's some good feedback. So as much as it was about proving people wrong, it was actually more about proving me right and the doubts that I had in my head, I wanted to prove them basically wrong as well.
It was an amazing team, the 2009-10 Geelong sides, but you ran into a Collingwood team. So the 2010 preliminary final, you guys were playing that fast-flowing attacking footy off halfback, and you come up against the Collingwood team, which was doing the frontal pressure really, really well. Scotty, you'll remember that. And do you remember that first quarter against the Cats? Because I think you kept them to one goal. You were guys with 40 points or something. Yeah. And it looked like it was a real punch in the mouth to the Collingwood team. And even to the Geelong team, it almost changed the game in a way. Or do you remember that?
Yeah, I think that was – I don't think we had beaten Geelong that year, but we got really close to them. And it was sort of – and St Kilda were the same. You know, 2009, Geelong played St Kilda in an amazing grand final. Mm. And sort of midway through that year, we played St Kilda and Geelong in consecutive weeks, I think, and got really close. Didn't beat them, got really close. Then we finished the back half of the year really strong. And I remember going into the prelim against Geelong thinking, I think we were the favourites, but all our boys knew that to get to where we've got to go, we've got to get past. It was almost like the big brother. You've got to, try and get past these guys. And I remember the moment when I thought, you know, we've got these guys in a bit of trouble was when Gaz got the ball in the first quarter in the back line, and he's sort of looking around what to do. And he's, you know, better than anyone at just finding a target. And he ended up just booting it. And I thought, I reckon we've got him pressured and we've got him in a really good spot. Now we've got to capitalize. And yeah, I think we kicked, I don't know, 7 or 8 goals in the first quarter and put a pretty big gap in the game.
But it was over then, yeah.
Yeah, I remember that, just that frontal pressure and just wanting to squeeze their handball game coming out of the half back line.
You remember that, Podsy?
Yeah, no, I do. I reckon that the game really changed around that sort of time. And playing in 2010, there was a couple of teams that were really challenging as a key forward to play against. And it was Collingwood, St Kilda, and a little bit of Adelaide as well. I reckon that they sort of really tried to enforce that whole team defensive approach and supporting each other. I remember, you know, Nick Maxwell at the time would always come third in, so you'd never get a one-on-one with... I'm not sure whether who was your key back.
You know, Nathan Brown, Ben
Nathan
Reed.
Brown, yeah, those guys were, you know, absolute young guns, and you'd never get them one on one. And St Kilda were the same, and I think Geelong in that time, you know, really relied on that 1v1 contest. You know, Bomber taught that from day dot, and our defenders were like that. And I think we can talk about 2011, but you know, one thing that Chris Scott came and did, he actually changed that whole sort of team defensive approach, and. You know, I've told this story a few times, is as a key forward, the way you used to put pressure on is chasing down opponents. Mm. So you'd chase them behind and tackle. And I reckon in 2011, the game sort of changed where you'd be up in front of the ball, and the way you'd actually apply pressure is getting in someone's face and pressing them. And I reckon from Geelong, there was a couple of teams that were doing it in 2011. And then as you're seeing now, like the majority of teams are, you know, getting their defense up and actually pressing a lot more. So that was probably the flipping point.
It's a crazy time at Geelong around that period, because I think Gazza left that year, Bomber Thompson left that year, and new coach, you came in and you went on to win the flag. But can you remember what it was like the time the Cats, with those two massive names and personalities, leaving the footy club?
Yeah, I remember it was obviously a little bit eerie that Bomber was such a presence and Gaz was the best player in the comp. But I remember Chris Scott coming in, and he was, I think he was only in his third year as a coach, but his clarity and his ability to actually give everyone a role and go, just execute this as a team, was second to none. It was the best I've seen in my time in football. So I think that really just shored up the group. And we had a lot of talent. We had a pretty good preseason. Everyone was pretty healthy and fit. And Scotty coming in, just changing that sort of... I think that language about team and clarity was really important.
So what was the strength of Bomber? What? How do you compare the two?
It's a good question. Bomber only coached me for a year. I sort of worked under him for a year.
Yep.
I mean, Bomber was exceptionally good, and Brendan McCartney and Kenny Hinckley at the time as well, at teaching players around the contest. So how to actually win your own ball, and then move it pretty quickly. So that was Bomber's strength, and I saw that from behind the scenes as a fitness coach, but also as a player. So the ability to teach contest, I think, was is really important, and Bomber did that well.
And he had an edge about him, Bomber, didn't he? Like,
yeah.
I reckon you knew when you're in Mark Thompson's company. He just had a. Did you feel that, or was that just a young journo in me?
You did, and I reckon 2010, my first year, he probably mellowed a little bit. He'd won two premierships, and he probably wasn't as edge as he was probably in 06 or 07 with the other guys, so I didn't see it.
He coached me, Bomber, in a state game.
Did he?
The Victoria versus Dream Team game.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I was 19 or 20, and he had like this presence about him.
Yeah, he did.
Like, I knew where he was at all times, and I was 19 or 20, and like if he said g'day to me, I was like jumpy, like g'day Bomber.
Yeah.
Like, and we had a team meeting, and I'll never forget, I was sitting there like, this is going to be amazing. Like, he's going to be so good. I'm going to learn so much here. And he's like, righto, like for kick-ins, Scarlo, you tell the boys what we're going to do for kick-ins. And for kick-ins, just like basically like the players just run the show. And then he's like, over to you boys now, go do your thing. And
that's
So I was like, and I go, Scarlo, what do I do? And he's like, Scarlo just goes, if you just stay in like the corridor, we'll hit you. It's just very much Geelong or what?
Yeah.
But yeah, you had a presence. Don't worry about that.
That's gold. I love it. You skipped forward to 2011. You had some redemption. You come up against the Pies again in the 2011 grand final. And it was you guys who jumped out to an early lead, Scotty. But then the game changed. Podsy, you hurt your shoulder.
Yep.
Went off the ground. And the Cats lifted as a result.
Yeah, that's true. A true story.
You made like structural change though when you went out. I still remember, I think it was like you went out, Jimmy Bartel went more forward.
Yeah.
For some reason, like we just could not, like Hawkins went into beast mode as like, I don't know, he must have just thought I better lift here because Pods has gone down, leading a goal kicking and just literally just marked everything and then handballed to Stevie J who'd kick the goal for him.
Yeah. No, he was massive that day, Hawk. I remember going back 4 weeks earlier, we played Collingwood in the last round of the year and I think we beat you by about 100 points.
Yeah.
And they were top of the table. We were second. So I think they finished first. We finished second at the end of the year. So going into the grand final, we just thought there's no way that Collingwood can turn around a 100-point loss. So we were pretty confident going into the game. And then, yeah, look, my game was pretty... ended pretty abruptly and pretty early in the second quarter. But yeah, I mean, Hawkey was had one of those years where he was in and out of the side a little bit. And I remember towards the end of the year, I think it was sort of out of him and Moons and the last couple of weeks before the end of the year, the Collingwood game last round, he actually just took a few clunks and his final series was exceptional. And it was almost like the boy became a man on grand final day. And Jimmy Bartel, I think, might have won the Norm Smith that day and went forward and kicked a couple of goals. But
There's one before half time. Remember from the ruck, or I do. Joel's hit it on the full through the points, and so it was deliberate.
Yes.
And then Bartel kicked that snap just before half time. They got another one just before half time because I think we almost had yous on the ropes. I reckon we were like almost like 17 or 24 points up.
Clokey was kicking him from the boundary.
Yeah, and then it just went like bang, bang, and all of a sudden it was like a draw again.
Yeah.
And it was like that moment in time where we just lost momentum. And then it was even close at three quarter time. And then once you boys got on top and it was almost like grand finals 10, you look at the time, there's not enough time here to close that gap. Then it just went like bang, 40 points before we knew it.
Yeah.
That last game of the year, I think I've said this before, it's like almost like the hardest game I've ever played in because they couldn't change ladder positions.
No.
We couldn't. And it was literally like Mick used to say, it was like dancing with your sister at a formal or something like that. It was just, it was like nobody wanted to get hurt in it. But.
Yeah.
The damage that I think that we did to ourselves was like we didn't play anywhere near. We almost didn't want to contact.
Yeah.
Whereas you guys come out and it's like we can do some damage here mentally, which I think they did. They planted that little seed that we probably could have copped losing by 30 points, but losing by 100 definitely gave them a lot more confidence than we needed to give them.
It was really like a fantastic sort of period of time when you look back at it, like for supporters in particular and Collingwood supporters that – 2009, 2010 and 2011 for, Geelong supporters in particular. I reckon Collingwood had a fantastic bunch of players and a pretty good game plan and a great coach. It would have been awesome sitting in the stands watching some of those Geelong Collingwood games.
Well, I played one in 07, my second year prelim versus Geelong when Geelong had half the All-Australian side and we had none.
Yeah.
And we played them at the MCG on a Friday night and we're sort of nipping at their heels all game and it was like around 5 points all night. And I remember... the siren went on half forward as Scotty Burns won the clearance and kicked it in, and the siren went.
Oh, yeah.
I remember we were so close, and all week though we built that up about these guys, the all Australian side, like nobody rates us, like Mick was brilliant, and like we went out there like seething, like no one rates us, we're no chance, and like
we've what he does to you.
Yeah, and then you know Geelong went on and won the grand final by 100 and some points, record margin. But yeah, we've had some, like since I've been playing, like Hawthorn, Geelong, easily like the two most dominant sides, but it's always been, from a Collingwood point of view, awesome playing against them.
Yeah. And I'm wondering if that's the, was that the Brad Ottens game? The 2007 prelim?
Yeah, where he went bananas.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, dominated.
That round 23 game in 2011, I reckon, and we may have mentioned this before, I reckon it was the only time that I've seen you not go in the con. There was a, do you remember there was a bouncing ball on the goal line, like full back late in the third quarter, maybe?
How do you remember this?
Because
I've got like a, I remember most of them. Yeah.
There was one contest and you just didn't want to be a part of it. And you let the ball go over. And that was the interesting psyche of the game.
Yeah, go over. And it's not worth getting hurt.
Yeah.
For a final series.
Interesting then with your move to Adelaide, Poddy.
Yeah.
Like, particularly now with the Jared Ruffhead situation, who is a guy who clearly wanted to go on, and Hawthorn coach Alistair Clarkson flagged, you know, where he might be a bit of VFL time. How did you handle that part of your career? Because you obviously thought there was some gas in the tank. Geelong, it wasn't going to work out. And then Adelaide came late. Can you explain?
Yeah, end of 2017. I mean, yeah. I had a pretty good chat with Scotty a couple of times, and probably didn't see it coming. Like, I think when we sort of spoke at the start of finals, I was looking at another contract the year after, and then we lost, I think, our first final to Frio, maybe, down at Geelong, and then we just beat Port, and then we lost to Hawthorn at the G by a goal. There's a Sean Burgon goal. I think that just the whole thing at Geelong sort of changed, and they wanted to go a different way. The last thing I was like frustrated or angry at that decision. I mean, when a club gives you an opportunity, you know, 4 or 5 years earlier, you can't be dirty on them making a move to go in a different direction. So I wasn't dirty at all. I would have loved to have stayed there and played potentially another year. You know, you had good mates there. I thought the coaching staff were fantastic. I was still learning a lot. I was pretty motivated to be successful. So that motivation was there. And the other thing I could see was actually really tough for Scotty to actually make some of the decisions he had to make, not just him, but some of the other list management at the time. So you could sort of hear it and see it in his voice when he's sort of telling you that we're not going to offer you a contract. So I'm not sure too many players probably say this, but you actually feel for coaches at that point in time. And then fortunate for me, I think, you know, a couple of weeks later, I caught up with David Noble in Adelaide and sort of talked about footy and where I sort of saw myself and how I could sort of help a group, and then what I wanted to do post-football as well. So that sort of ducks aligned, I suppose. And
I think that's one of the things I've noticed from my playing career is guys that have good rapport with people, build good relationships at football clubs, that goes like, it just goes through the industry and everyone knows that. And it works the other way as well. Like if you know, say if you got delisted, you crack the shits, guys know that as well. And it goes around. And as you mentioned before, like a guy like Ruffy, doing what he did in the VFL,
yeah.
I think I heard some commentary, like there's going to be 17 clubs at the end of season, if not they're not 18. Already inquiring about what his plans are in the next stage of his career.
Yeah.
Because there's like, you know, I don't know Pods that well, but you can get by listening to your talk, like you would have had great relationships at Geelong, team first attitude, and it just ricochets. So I'm not surprised, you know, a guy like you, Ruffy, like the opportunities are always going to come.
Yeah. I think that, you know, it's easily to get this sort of sense of entitlement when you play AFL footy, and it's like, well, I've been here, I've been successful, I've played well, part of the team, just keep me on or sign me for more money or whatever it is. But our industry is not like that. I mean, you come along pretty quickly and you get spat out pretty quickly as well. I think it's just part of the industry, and I was okay at the time.
That said, boys, would it be hard for Ruffy, when he played at the MCG in the VFL curtain raiser this week, what about when he goes out to Frankston? Plays in front of 100 people. It's a four-time premiership legend, future Hall of Famer. You guys have played it. Would that be hard? Would that be...
Oh, I think no doubt when you get home on a Thursday night and you know that you're not on the AFL list, that'd be hard. But Ruffy's always been a guy that's always team first, and he would understand that his role at the moment is to go down there, play well for himself, play well for the team, and he knows that his form will decide if he gets back in. But there's a bigger picture to it, and that's developing the next wave of guys, and he'll probably take great satisfaction in seeing the next wave of guys come through. And You know, I've got no doubts personally that I think Ruffy will get more senior football, but the way he handles himself is first class. But no doubt it'll be tough. It'd be tough on anyone having to go back and play VFL football, I think.
Difficult part of that is I don't reckon it matters so much about his form. He kicked 5 goals at the weekend. He could kick 10 goals next week. I reckon it's about what Mitch Lewis does and Connor Nash. I reckon that, for me, would be the most difficult part because, in a way, I don't know how much it matters how well he's going to play on the weekend because Clarko's got the big picture and he's looking ahead to next year. And
I think it helps if he's playing good footy, though. If he's playing good footy and a door gets pushed ajar.
Yeah.
But, yeah, there's no – like, you also would – I'd imagine he played well, but then he sees how well Hawthorn played, and you'd probably think, you know, I'm here for another couple of weeks.
There's some silver lining. Pendles wouldn't have experienced this. My last year at Adelaide, I didn't play an AFL game, and I remember driving to Sandful games. I probably played about eight or nine games in the Sandful that year, and driving to the game, you're thinking, what am I doing? Like, I'm going to a subpar venue. There's shocking change rooms, and some of the players I actually don't know. They're top ups from the country and stuff.
How are you, mate? Yeah, Pods are here.
Pods, how are you going? So Pendles hadn't experienced that. But once the ball bounces, it's like a game of footy, and it's like, how fun is this? There's this pressure element that sort of gets removed when you play at that level, and it's like back to the enjoyment factor of what it was like when you played. When you were growing up and, you know, school footy and that. So I actually really enjoyed seeing some of the younger guys and playing with them and the enthusiasm that they have. Mm. So I'm sure Ruffy would be experiencing that at the moment. The silver lining is probably that.
Coaching his opponents, his next level, though.
Yeah, that's next level, though.
That's why he's the world's best bloke. And you're absolutely right, Scotty. While all 18 clubs will be desperately trying to get him in some sort of coaching, welfare, admin role next year, he should be top of everyone's list. And we all love him. He's a big fan of the podcast too, Ruffy.
Yeah, okay. Give him a shout out soon.
Yeah, we got him lined up. Hey, you're a very powerful man now, Podsy. Not only astute businessman and a goal kicking machine, you're also, along with David Rath, amongst the brains trust there, who are in charge of really shaping the future direction for the game. Tell us about your role and why that appealed. Before we get into some of the more nitty gritty.
Yeah, I think the role came along off the back of 2017 after finishing coaching with the Crows. Steve Hocking gave me a call and sort of said, what are you doing? And he sort of said that there's an opportunity to be like a stakeholder management person at the club. So basically liaising with clubs and players and the PA and coaches and whatnot back to the AFL. So that's sort of how it started. And then as the preseason sort of got going, we sort of started to develop a game analysis team. So, you know, having the coaching background, I was able to sort of fit in there. And then there was this this whole rhetoric for the last probably, let's call it 5 or 6 years, about congestion in the game. Can the game be better? So the executive, the commission just wanted us to have a look at it, basically. So all my role was is basically trying to develop a process that as many people in the industry can have their say on what they believe should be the future of the game. So, you know, as much as it gets made out to be that Hawk or myself or Rathi make changes or think changes, we actually went to the industry and thought, what are all the ideas? And I think there was 50 at the time. What ones can we actually implement? And the objectives were about, you know, giving players more time and space in the game, advancing the game for our fans and, seeing some strategic tension from coaches. So with that in mind, you're very limited on what you can do, but we tried to achieve those objectives. So we came up with about 9 different changes at the time, but we implemented, I suppose, 9 different changes.
How are you feeling 8 rounds into the new season?
Yeah, it's probably more of a question for Pendles because, you know, we watch the game as fans. There's clearly some benefits to the 6-6-6. You know, personally, I think. I mean, the game looks like it stays around for longer. You know, guys like Pendles and the Dangerfields of the world look like they've got a bit more time in the centre bounce to clear the ball and execute their skills. And I think that'll actually grow and develop as we go along. I think these guys, probably the last 6 or 7 years, have grabbed a contested ball and beaten one person, but the next person's been on top of them straight away. I reckon they're now starting to work out that once they beat that first person, they can actually get a clear disposal. And that second layer of defense isn't there as quick. So I reckon once the players actually evolve there, that level of skill might actually increase and help the ball clear that area. But it's probably over to Pendles to sort of see what he thinks of.
Well, we spoke about it after round one.
Yeah.
I was like,
And you were a bit anti-change, remember?
Yeah, I was. And I still like to give the game time to work itself out, because I think when you understand the mindset of a coach, it's not tell me what the rule is, it's how can I exploit the rule. Mm. That's how they think. But I think 6-6-6 is literally the rule you can't exploit. Like, there's no way, other than deliberately getting a warning, which I don't know, you can argue teams try and do. Mm-hmm. But, you know, like you look at the Melbourne Gold Coast game, when Gold Coast got that, what was it, 5 points up? That was last year, that game's over.
Yeah.
18, or what do you put, 15 blokes behind the footy?
Yeah, exactly.
No score. Whereas when you watch it now, like I was watching that game and I'm tuning in, I'm like, Melbourne win this out of the clearance, they have a chance to win the game, which is, I think, which keeps everyone excited. Where round one, I said, it gave us a chance to get in front. But then when we got in front, I was like, geez, I'd love to put people back here. But, you know, then Geelong got the next clearance, they went in front. But then it's our chance again to go back the other way. So as Podsy said, I think as time develops, sides will get a better understanding of how to exploit it. For so long, as you said, like as a centre bounce player, I had four people coming in off either side and wingers flying in. You had two half forwards that started at half back, bolt through, and you had players coming from everywhere. And now you actually see guys take it out of the centre bounce, have a bit of time and space, handball it forward, break a line, have shots from centre bounce clearances. I reckon it's a much better look for the game.
And just to reiterate what Pendle said about like coaches, at the end of the day, the AFL implement rule changes, players are at different levels and different talents, but the reality of it is that it's a multifaceted approach to the way the game is played, the way it's executed, the stats in the game, and it's mainly to do with coaching and coaching tactics and evolution of that as well. So, it'd be remiss for us to think that putting a couple of rule changes in the game is going to increase this stat or that stat, because, you know, the tactics in the game are so far in advance from what they were 10 years ago. Mm. The 6-6-6 is quite exciting for fans, I think.
I really like it. As an observer of the game, interesting, Don Pike's comments at the weekend, he thought it was a bit more contested, but I like the sort of one-on-one contest, especially late in the game, Scotty. The one query I had around Podsy, it was, did you need to be as urgent? Because it felt like it happened in a rush last year, and then you trialed it at state league level, and I just wondered, and I'm interested to know what your thoughts, why didn't you let it go for a year in the VFL and other competitions to have a really good look at it? Because it did seem came in really quickly.
It's a good question. I think it's sort of been, some of the stuff's been talked about for a number of years, so we're probably the first team to come and actually do a fair bit of work on it and do some research. And I think that if you look at the other rule changes, I mean, the main one is the 6-6-6 is the one that's probably changed it the most. I mean, the kicking, being able to play on, I mean, it hasn't really changed the game too much. I mean, as an offensive team, you still get the ball through 18 players. So we never thought that was going to increase scoring just because you could cross the line or move the guy back 5 metres. But we might start to see some more creativity in that space going forward. And most of the other changes, it's been interpretation. It's really like the hands in the back one. That was actually never a rule in our game.
That Tick.
Was
like that one.
Yeah. So that was something that was brought in probably about 15 years ago. So that was just basically going back to that. The rucks being able to take the ball out of the ruck. I mean, that's something that's just, I think you've seen more ruckmen now clear the ball. Yep. Collingwood's got a pretty strong ruckman in Grundy. I've seen that. Seen him do it a few times. So
do you like that one, Scotty?
Yeah, I do. Yep. Yeah, I like that. And like Matthew Cruiser did it 4 times from centre bounces on the weekend, grabbed it, tried to clear it. Yep. But you still get a chance to actually do that. Whereas in previous years, as soon as you touch him, it's a free kick. He could clear the ball, but it's like you just had to touch him.
Yeah.
Free kick. Even I spoke about the hands in the back rule potentially has that ability to change the game back, where defenders can't position so aggressively in front anymore because they used to just push back as hard as they wanted. And if you just put your hand there to protect your space, it was a free kick. Whereas now, if you want to position that aggressively and the kick goes over the top, you can put your hand there. Away you go. So that will, I reckon that will be one of those things that over time sides think, geez, we can't position as aggressively because we've got to actually, we can't just back and get a sort of a cheap way out.
Mm. Yeah. So most of them have just been like interpretation changes, Jay, really, to be honest. And I think to the players' credit, I mean, they worked on over one pre-season and we haven't had too many issues. I mean, the 50-metre penalty might frustrate fans, but the reason...
Did you think of the Tommy Phillips call, Scotty?
I was actually on the bench, and because we get shown all this stuff in the preseason.
Yep.
Yeah.
I was on the bench, and I seen him give away the 50 and the Carlton bloke take off, And I seen Flipper go to chase him and I was like, oh no, he's going to give away another 50. So we knew the rule,
yeah.
But it was just his competitive instinct wants to get in front. And then you hear people like, you know, it's not a good look for the game, but we actually know the rule. You know, we actually use it as an example, again, just an education. Like pretty much if you give away a 50 and the guy gets past you, just get out of the play and let someone else take the mark.
Hand over.
And then what happened though, next play is Crispy got 50. The Carlton guy just said like, nah, I'm out of the play. He run up, no one took the mark. Then we got a goal from it. So I like it because I was sick of that one where, you know, you'd have 50, the guy would run a tiny bit in front of you. You'd try and run, he'd like block you, you'd give you
So that
back.
Was deliberate?
Which one?
The cramping of the 50-metre penalty?
Yeah. Oh, 100%.
Absolutely. And yeah. that's the thing.
Exploiting the rule.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like you get rewarded with a 50-metre penalty if someone's either thrown a ball at you or pushed you too late or whatever it is. So how do you not get rewarded for that when – then that team just basically sends 18 players behind the ball and you can't actually take advantage of the 50. So that came about, I think it was an idea from someone from the industry, actually, and we sort of put it through the test and I think it's going to be okay.
But do you need games to be high scoring or higher scoring, Scotty?
No, I don't think you do. I think the whole scoring thing will work itself out. One thing that AFL can't do is come out and make the decision going inside 50 for you. It's one of the hardest things to do and I think that's why players that can do it, Wellesley, Gary Ablett, guys like that, it sets them apart. And the other one thing that's never changed with our industry is goal kicking hovers around 55-60% accuracy for set shots for goal.
Yeah.
So they can't come do that work for you. And I think over time, as the rules implement, like in the back end of this season, clubs get used to it, there'll be ways that they think, righto, we tried to do this, didn't work, let's just simplify it again. And the sides that simplify it the most, and I think last year's granny with us and West Coast was 77-72. It's a pretty good game.
Yeah.
West Coast Sydney Grand Final 2006 was a pretty good game.
Scoring isn't a nirvana, I think, and I think the AFL get a lot of pressure on that in that space. But I agree with Pendles. I don't think scoring is the answer. I mean, goal kicking traditionally has been about 54%. It's sitting this year at 45%
accuracy.
So you know, you increase that to 50 even. You're at like 2016, 2015 sort of levels. So
kick straight, Scotty. Take the pressure off Gil.
I don't get set shots, mate. I kick him to Geordie and Geordie misses.
But yeah, I mean, scoring gets talked about a lot. And at the end of the day, we interviewed our fans. We sort of surveyed our fans last year, and everyone loves scoring. Everyone loves goal kickers and whatnot.
Yeah.
It's a part of our game that people love, but it's not the be all and end all.
You were a very good set shot, weren't you? Your technique. You were dead
okay.
Eye.
I was like, okay.
That means he was above average.
You're very good. You had a very beautiful technique. Last one on this, Podsy. Do you think you'll make more at the end of the year?
I actually don't know, Jay, to be fair. AFL Max is taking a fair bit of my time at the moment.
Yeah.
So I'm at the AFL a day a week. So
sort of part-time operator, Podsy.
Yeah, and I'm still part of the game analysis team and we're looking at that. But I think, as Pendle said, like the back half of the year, I think the game will settle. And sometimes it's just letting the game settle and letting the coaches actually, you know, to dump sort of 8 or 9 changes on coaches, they probably focus on that during the preseason. Next preseason, if there's no changes, they might actually, start talking a few different tactics on how they actually expose the rules a bit differently. So
yep.
I'm not sure.
The amount of work, because I watched a few clubs train over preseason just to see what they do.
You went on your summer holiday. You went and hung out.
No, no. Like, so while we train, so after we train,
yeah,
over
just go and watch other teams
walk
train.
Down to Melbourne yeah. and just yeah. see what they do.
You need to get out more, Scott.
The amount of times I've seen teams,
so good, yeah.
The teams practicing kick-ins to try and exploit the rule.
Yeah,
I was like, you're not. How you think you're going to exploit it? You've got an extra 5 meters, and it's not.
Yep.
And everyone's
more
like,
width.
Oh, yeah, but you don't really, because the zone just moves back 5 meters, and you just force them into a pocket. Like, but yeah, it's amazing the amount of times. Clubs, I reckon, now would sit back and go, geez, we wasted a lot of time on kicking. Even they weren't really that vital.
Yeah.
Podsy, just one more issue, mate. It's been great to be able to sit down and have
issue.
A chat.
This is scary.
No, this is a half folly. Mate, the mid-season draft, man, you're a great mature age pickup. And we see Tim Kelly. I mean, the decision at the time for Geelong to keep this man, almost against his family's will. Clearly, his family wanted to go back to Perth. They kept him. They made it work. And now he's a genuine Brownlow contender. It's an unbelievable story, this guy. Maybe 800,000. Even it's been touted as a $1 million a year player. It's phenomenal. What do you think about the mid-season draft and the opportunity it presents clubs to get someone who's ready to go?
Well, your word there about opportunity is the key. I mean, If you look at other sports around the world, I mean, Scott, I'm sure, is a big NBA fan, and even just other businesses, like everyone's got an opportunity to actually progress their career and develop. So if we can open up windows at the AFL where players can come in and get into the elite system in different ways, I'm all for it. Personally, I think if clubs can either, you know, fill a need this year or fill a need into the future and use it, I think it's great. And the more Tim Kellys out there that there are, the better.
I think it'll strengthen the second tier comp in the VFL, Waffle.
How could it strengthen? Are you going to take players from it?
No, but I think you'll strengthen it because more guys will stay in those leagues at the chance of playing AFL football. Whereas after, you know, if you have to play a whole season and wait just for one opportunity, you don't get it. Play for a whole season, don't get an opportunity. Probably not too many guys do what Pods do and stick it out. They play 3 or 4 years and think, oh, bugger this, I'm cashing out.
He's
in the country.
A smart man, Pendles.
Yeah, isn't he?
Because that was the first thing that came to the AFL was like, you're going to weaken the second tier comps by taking players away. But I think if I was in that position, I'd actually stay longer 100%. And go, you know what, even some of the players that get delisted from the AFL, you've had some players recently from Collingwood get delisted and they're playing VFL now.
Yeah, Sam McLarty isn't like one, delisted last year. Massive chance. Whereas if
he's back on the radar,
So I think he's potentially a chance to get mid-season. But those guys potentially like delisted from AFL. I'm not playing VFL. I'm not going to wait a whole year for the opportunity. Whereas now it's like I might get picked up in half a year's time. So it's worth the time and the investment to stay ready and ready for that AFL call up.
How many clubs have got picks, Jay? Do you know?
Last count, it was 15, and then Sean Grigg retired, so maybe that's 16.
Is that right? That's pretty high.
Yeah. I'm trying to think. I don't think Fremantle has one.
Yeah.
I can't remember the other two. Sam Lawson's a guy from Coburg. He's a 23-year-old carpenter, lightning quick forward. He's the man we're sort of talking about as going potential number one. So, I mean, if a chippy comes on straight onto an AFL list and potentially plays senior footy in the back half of the year.
Just, good story.
Just a brilliant story. Isn't it? Just before we let you go, Podsy, what's your advice to the Sam Lawsons out there, the 25-year-old plumbers who are talented players, maybe didn't have the dedication, you know, but there's something still inside them you think they can make, you think they can play the top level. What'd be your advice to those guys who might be listening now?
I think what I learnt was that playing at that or getting to play at that elite level is sort of a little bit out of your control, but the only thing that's in your control is being the best player you can be.
Yeah.
So, you know, focus on the things that coaches tell you from a feedback perspective and the things you need to work on, and you never know who's going to knock on your door. So there's an element of luck in our industry and right time, right place sort of thing. So
but it changed your life in a pretty significant way, right? Like you were doing your fitness course and playing VFL footy, and then you're winning an AFL premiership and now running the headquarters. Like it was a big sliding doors moment for yourself.
Yeah, no, it definitely was. I didn't think of it like that, Jay, actually. I just sort of take one day as it comes. And but, yeah, no, it was life-changing. But the reason why it was life-changing is because you actually get to experience an elite environment and you get to make some really good friends and some really good mates along the way too. So,
Podsy, we appreciate your time here on the Jock and Jerno show, mate. You're a magnificent player. It was a tremendous story in football, really, because I reckon you changed some of the club's thinking the way with the impact you had at Geelong, and clearly you've made some amazing relationships because that's why you're running AFL headquarters in Geelong. McLaughlin's right in, man, now. So thank you so much for joining us on the Jock and Jerno show.
Thanks. And just a couple of follow-ups for me just to clear, get Pendles on the Mount Mary wine list.
Yes.
That's number one. And then send you guys some tickets to AFL Max when she opens
in June. Yeah, I need enrolment for AFL Max for Jax. And you'll probably need three balls while he's there because you're still everyone else's.
Will do.
Wait till you have three of them, Scotty. You just chuck them all in there and shut their gate and let them go.
Head straight to the cafe.
On the Podsy. Thanks, mate.
Thanks, guys.
I love the chat with Podsy. What a star. Very intelligent, capable man. No wonder he's conquering business as well as football. Scotty?
Love having a guest in. You can really delve into some issues and it's so good to hear him talk about what they were trying to do, even the mid-season stuff at the moment. Like, the inspiration he would be for guys. Like, he's really the guy who opened up the whole you're older than 22, you can get on a list still. And the amount of players that would be playing VFL that get told about his story would be unbelievable.
Yeah. An absolute star. I remember it being massive news when he did get the call up. Hey, before we get welcome Braden Cox and get your Twitter questions, because there have been some pearlers over the past week after your narrow win over Carlton. But in the NBA, it's what a playoff series we've got at the moment, Scotty. And the Kawhi Leonard buzzer beater. I think it was the only Game 7 winning buzzer beater shot in NBA history. Bounced four times off the rim and sunk.
Yeah.
What a moment.
Yeah, so yesterday we had the review of the Carlton game. So it was 1:30 or something, the review. And everyone walking into the review was sort of had their phone, and like I had my phone, I was watching Philly versus Toronto, and walked in, and Bucks asked the IT guy, can you put this on the big screen? So we got it up on the big screen with like 30 seconds left.
No.
So the review's supposed to start. So we're all just sitting there watching like NBA.
So the review had to wait.
The review waited, which was unbelievable. So we're all sitting there. You know, Kawhi misses one of the free throws. Anyway, Jimmy Buckets goes all the way down, get the layup, 4 seconds to go. Just sitting there, and I was actually sitting next to Bucks at the time, and just sitting there watching it, and then see that unfold. You know, his four bounces, gets to his spot, rises up, scores. The whole theaterette, like we had probably 60, 70 people in there. Like it just went up. Like it was like we were there live. Like
sick.
Massive screen. Yeah, it was so good. And it's, I love that, you know, we do that as a club. Like we watch Super Bowl, you watch all these big games, because as much as it sit there and it's a cool moment, you also can learn a bit about how they perform under pressure. You watch the close games, you watch how teams execute. But yeah, the shot was unbelievable. Like his last quarter was unbelievable. And even listening to talk after the game about how it wasn't just fluke, like he's practiced that shot. He had a game winner earlier in the year where he had 3 seconds left. So he took three bounces and got his shot off. This game he had 4 seconds, so he knew he could have an extra bounce. He'd missed a shot from that same spot earlier in the quarter, so he just wanted to give that more air. Like there's so much detail he spoke about in his post-game press conference that I listened to, just about like these guys that are that good, that there is no such thing as luck with these guys. Like he knew what he was doing. He spoke about he wanted to give it a chance to go in, and yeah, it's one of the best shots. And even all the photos that have come out after it, where he's on the ground, one of the bench guys looks like he's trying to surf. Joel Embiid's like just staring, like it's unbelievable. Like that's going to be some cool art that someone's going to have in his house. Kawhi will probably get it done first.
What did you think about his decision to go to the corner?
He spoke after the game about the reason why, and that's one of his preferred spots on the floor to shoot from. And it's the short three, even though it was a two. And he needed to get some separation, so he thought if he caught the ball at the top of the key, like a few hard dribbles one way, forces the defense to move. So that was the spot he felt comfortable. And the rest is history. And it was amazing that we could sit there live and watch that. I would have been so filthy. I probably would have been watching my phone if Bucks had started just in the corner. I would have yahooed at the first edit he showed or something. But yeah, we got to watch it, which was unreal.
Who's your tip to win it from here quickly?
I think Golden State. I love the final matchups though, like Portland, Golden State, like Klay Thompson, Steph Curry versus CJ and Dame, and then Kawhi Leonard versus the Greek Freak. I think it's going to be amazing. East-West Coast final series.
Unbelievable matchup that will be. Should we recap Game of Thrones quickly? Have we all seen it?
Loved it.
Wait, you got to spoilers and give everyone a pause.
Yeah, true.
Okay, well.
They can, they're paused, rewind, or
that's the end of the episode for you.
Yeah.
Game of Thrones.
It was an uncomfortable watch.
What?
I found it unsettling. I found it unsettling.
Just too much violence for you, Jay.
Yeah. Daenerys too aggressive.
Just the burning of people over an extended period. I mean, I loved how the script flipped. So the script flipped. So we didn't like Cersei, and then we loved Daenerys, and then all of a sudden in the second last episode, we're suddenly feeling human emotion for Cersei. Like,
what? Who was?
Mate. There was
empathy.
Yeah, absolutely. Don't you reckon?
No.
How did you view it?
So it all set up the fact that she said like fear is the choice because she didn't feel like she had followers. Daenerys, like the only choice for her, I felt, to get true leadership was through fear. She didn't. Jon Snow has the people already, so she wasn't going to be more loved than Jon Snow.
It's a move of desperation.
So the fear and the dragon certainly struck fear into the heart of everybody, and now everyone's going to follow her. So it's now the next episode is how do the Starks unseat Daenerys? That's where I think Aya comes into play.
There's not much time to let it settle, is
there? No, I love that.
All done.
No, I feel it's been a bit
rushed.
When
that bell rang, I was like, it's on. Like, 100%, because John didn't kiss her the way she wanted to be kissed.
Yeah.
So
it was their auntie. His auntie.
But they've done more than
that's
kiss.
That's a bit awkward.
They've done more than kiss. So
yeah.
I'm not sure if you've ever kissed your auntie, Scott, but it's a different the kind fear. Of peck on the cheek.
Mate, the fear was... although I would have liked to have seen Cersei and Daenerys
little bit closer, eye to eye, not a stare off from 50 Ks away.
Yeah. Unpopular opinion. I liked how Cersei died. A lot of people didn't like it, but I thought...
Unceremoniously.
I thought romantic, even though they're kind of brother-sister and that whole weird
with Jamie
thing.
But
them going down and literally her kingdom collapses on her. Yeah, it crumbles down on her. And I thought that was good.
I think a lot of people missed that her kingdom crashed down on her.
But
her empire's gone.
What did they want? Like if they had
everyone wanted her to be killed by 10 different people.
Yeah, but if they had Arya come in or anyone else come in, that's just satisfying the fandom. That's just and they haven't done that.
They haven't done that
the whole way through. So I thought that was good.
I liked the episode.
I liked it.
The best scene for me is when the Cersei's army, Head to Bells, surrendered and there was this awkward pause, and then they see the old dragon going ballistic behind them. They pick their swords back up.
No, they didn't pick their swords up.
They did.
No, because Grey Worm threw the spear. And that's when they grabbed their swords.
Didn't the penny drop that, hang on, this is not going to just be a...
No, I think the penny was sort of like, we're hoping there's not more fights here, but I think we're... damned if we do, damned if we don't.
And then Grey Worm.
Jon Snow wasn't happy. That's where the separation come, because he doesn't like to fight people. Well,
and you can see why he wasn't happy. They went 0 to 100.
They became the tyrants.
I like the view though from up top when they're showing Daenerys literally like she's burning her way through the streets, and it's like all going to lead to Cersei.
I thought
it was almost like punishment for Cersei. She's literally watching her whole city burned down bit by bit, and she knew she was the last bit.
Did you think about fast forwarding any bits? I thought about fast forwarding.
Really?
I couldn't stomach.
Like, I was glued to it.
When the kids and that are burning and the mum dies and stuff.
You don't like that, but it was all like Cersei's done that before. She's never feared worrying about who dies, the innocent or the guilty.
I fast forwarded the Ramsay bits. Remember, whatever. I had to fast forward that stuff. I can't handle that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Coco, you got the Twitter questions this week, mate. This is where we come up. We grab the best questions from the Jock and Journo fans, and we put them to the five-time, three-time for some of your golden insights, Coco. So what do you got?
There's been plenty. This one from Drew Jackson. Are we doing merch?
We can, Drew.
Can we?
We can do anything you need on the show.
I'm surprised
we can do.
Pendles hasn't what thought do we want? Of that season one, episode one.
We'll get some Jock and Journo tees.
Maybe it'd be a huge hit with people.
We can do that. We'll look into
beanie.
It. We need pre-orders though. I'm not going to lay out the cash and then the investment doesn't pay off.
Yeah, don't look at me. I'm not funding it.
I'm
a poor journo.
This coming from Jay Chillin 25. Don't mind that handle. I'd love to know some of Pendle's thoughts on Paddy Cripps after playing against him on the weekend. Mm. Where does he rank amongst players he's played against?
This would be a big call, but he's Carlton's best player that I've ever played against.
Oh, great comment, Scott.
Wait, who does that bring in though?
Murphy, Judd, Favola. He's
better than Judd.
Yeah. The impact that he has in a game is, like, since I've played against Carlton, he dominates a game more than any Carlton player that I've played against.
Judd won a Brownlow there while you were there,
but I only played against them a couple of times. I'm just saying from an impact point of view, in the last 20 years, he'll go down. In the last 20, 25 years, if he keeps going the way he's going, he's Carlton's best player in the last 20, 25 years. I don't know too much about the history and who's come before them, but he'll be better than most of them.
What did you think? You had a close look at his leadership. How did you rate that?
I think leadership throughout the week is really important.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like he set it up after the North game with he put his hand up, I didn't start well. Even having him on the podcast, I could get that sense of like they're stealing themselves for us. And we knew that was coming. Everyone said to us, we sort of escaped the game, got out of jail type thing. It's like the last four times we've played Carlton, the game's been decided by under four goals.
Yeah.
Beat them in the preseason by a point. So in our eyes, we were happy to get the result again because they've given us good challenges and we've had really good battles with them. We don't read ladder position when you play against the side, which everyone in the external world does. But then on game day, just his ability to drag his side. Like he didn't start well. I think he had four or five touches in the first quarter.
Yep.
And I think that the more Carlton's side get better around him, the more the load will be off his shoulders and he'll be able to go do his thing. But at the moment, he's just so good at just dragging him, wheeling himself, lead by example. Like he just keeps going. Five touches in the first quarter and then I think he had 12 in the second. He just kept going, keeps working, contest to contest, ran the clearances. You just got to try and make his day hard, but he's just really strong-willed. And as I said, I think as the side gets better around him and performs, like you see on the weekend, when he was quiet, they were still playing some pretty good footy.
that goal late on his right side.
Yeah.
Was important as well. Is he the best? So do you think he's the number one player in the game now?
I think it's hard to say who's the number one player in the game, but he's in the conversation.
Yeah.
Like, is he the best player in the game? I don't know. I don't really think there
hard
is
to
a
split.
There is a best player in the game, but there's certainly guys in the competition, Tim Kelly, Fife, Bontempelli, Brody Grundy, Paddy Cripps, who are at the peak of their game, and you should just enjoy them doing their thing.
What happened when, before we go back to you, Coco, what happened when Geordie and Cripps
late in the game, they hit each other hard a couple of times, and it's the first time I've seen somebody actually move Paddy Cripps. Like, Geordie hit him pretty hard, and they both, I think it was like two big bulls looking at each other like, did you just move me? Did you just tackle me type thing? Like, two big alpha males. So they'll be exciting players for many years to come.
This one goes into that. This is E. Warbles, who said, did Cripps provide any banter after he sidestepped you to kick the last goal?
Oh, did he get around you then?
Yeah, he got right around you.
Yeah. He was trying to cover off somebody else probably. But, he didn't provide any banter. He kicked a huge goal for him and just celebrated.
One hell of a celebration.
We didn't have really any banter at all. Had a bit of a chat after the game and just said, keep doing your thing, mate, because you're doing well and you're leading them well.
It was flat after the game. He said, reading lips as he walked over the boundary line, how did we effing lose that? So he was disappointed, the great man. Saw him in the rooms for 5 minutes afterwards. He almost looked angry about the loss. Anyway.
Interesting one coming off our chat with Pods. Cal King, if you could, which rule would you change from this season and reverse it? Which rule would you change back?
I'd probably change the 50-metre interpretation because I don't think it was that
good
much of an issue. Like, you know, to give the follow-up 100.
100's a big penalty.
Because also part of the rule that I don't think people understand and that we got explained twice is that if you get a 50 metres, you can play on after 10 metres and move the footy. So technically on the weekend when Flip gave his 50 metres away and was running back and the Carlton guy was sort of veering to try and catch him, that could have been play on because he's run off his line.
Yep.
So, I just think that rule, 50's 50. It almost should just be like this. If a player gives away a 50, you're out of the play. You can't go on the mark, so that just bang, removes him straight away. And if you try to get on the mark, it's another 50. So, like, Flip, if you've given away the 50, you're out of the play.
Yeah.
That's it.
And over. Last one, Coggo.
At Sports Tragic 2019, Scott, have you ever climbed a goalpost?
No. It's a pretty impressive effort, though. Climbed it pretty quickly.
Should it have been a free kick?
I don't know. It's funny. I heard the commentary, like letter of the law, it should be, but then you want to give umpires more license.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it should have been. Like, imagine if Sydney lost because of that. Like, Essendon weren't in position to win the game. It wasn't like Myers made the distance with a kick or anything like that. I know you're saying, but then, if it's 5 metres closer, blah, blah, blah. But it's like, put it this way. If you're relying on that to win a game, there's a lot that's gone wrong before then. So, And then if you want the game to be umpired, how everyone says now, the letter of the law, everyone will be up in arms in 2 weeks' time because everything's getting umpired too strictly and it's a grey area game.
Well, there you go.
There you go.
I think they need to rewrite the rule to prescribe not only for shaking the post but also for climbing the post.
Oh, yeah. Did you know it was a rule?
Shaking the post, yep.
No, climbing a post, did you know it was a rule?
It was that isn't a rule. That's what I'm saying. Oh. It needs to be rewritten. Yeah. So basically any deliberate interference with the post or something.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway.
Fair enough.
Scotty, good luck against St Kilda this week. How are you feeling? You're feeling good? We're 9 rounds in. How's the body?
8 rounds in.
Rounds in.
Body's good.
Yeah.
Looking forward to the Saints. Played a lot different to the last time we played them. Defend really well. They've got a really good balance how they go about it. So it's going to be a cracking contest.
Jay was saying you look skinny. You look very skinny.
I think it's because I've got the black jeans on and the white t-shirt. Just
don't you reckon he looks skinnier?
Gaunt.
Every time I see him.
You said gaunt. No. He looked gaunt.
I think just Jay gets the winter layer on, so he accuses other people looking skinny to deflect.
The winter layer.
Past month hasn't been friendly, hasn't been good. Scotty, all the best the weekend, mate. Coco, well done as always, mate. Those videos from last week were exceptional. More to come. We've got some big guests lined up. Thanks so much for listening to the Jock and Journo Show. We will catch you next week.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.